In these podcasts, I will be talking with people who share their stories of tragedy and of hope. I will be exploring mental health and well-being with workplace professionals and also with folk who have struggled to make sense of their own lives. My hope is that these shared experiences will remove the loneliness from those people who are convinced it is their fate to suffer alone. I'm Dave Thomas, and I've been a serving police officer for over 20 years. You are very welcome to join me on Walk the Talk. In the third of our podcasts on adverse childhood experiences, I talked to a man who committed a string of armed robberies at provincial building societies in the southeast of England. Such became his notoriety, he was dubbed the M25 Bandit. He was eventually arrested by the Metropolitan Police's SO19 and has spent a total of 18 and a half years in jail. Graham Godden has had a difficult childhood and was sent to boarding school for maladjusted children. He discovered drugs and alcohol and slowly slid into a life of crime. Whilst in jail, however, he managed to overcome his addictions and started to strip away the layers exposing his inner self and how his own life choices went far beyond his addictions. Graham has three children of his own and is now involved in helping prisoners find their own feet, a position he was once in. So how did an armed robber become a force for good? Well, we're about to find out. I'm delighted to say he joins me now. Graham Godden, welcome to Walk the Talk. Now, your crimes are a matter of public record and you spent nearly 19 years in jail. In 2007, you met and became firm friends with ex-police officer Jackie Moulton, an unusual union, I suppose. In fact, you said it was a real love for another human being. What was it that she offered that made you consider your own life?
Well, just to put in context, when I met Jackie, I'd been in recovery myself for a couple of years and 12-step recovery, and Jackie used to come into the prison with Alcoholics Anonymous, and I heard her speak, and I am the type of person who, when I get into something, I want to know everything about it. And when I heard Jackie speak, I heard her speak about a different level of recovery to that I'd heard from other people. And just listening to her, it was not about the drink or the drug or anything. It was about the inner journey and just stripping back the layers. And that really appealed to me to think about, because I've always felt that, you know, I've always been slightly different. I've always felt like I was disconnected from myself for a lot of years. And listening to Jackie talk about that inner self and stripping back the layers really appealed to me, and it was just something I'd heard when I heard her speak. It was just something I hadn't really heard before, a different level of recovery and a different thought process to it, if that makes sense.
Because I think a lot of addicts say that, you know, they're sick and tired of being sick and tired, I suppose.
Yeah. It's a very common phrase used in recovery, and I was certainly. I'd worked through the steps, and I'd been in on a drug rehabilitation wing within a prison, and, you know, I'd been clean for a while, and then I relapsed again after 3 years, and it was that second time around where I'd just completed the full treatment program that Jackie came in, and and what she said really appealed to me.
Because I'm interested, you said you relapsed. Can you put that down to one particular thing, or was it an inability to understand yourself prior to that point?
Well, this is a saying, this with hindsight, I think it was, I was probably at that stage where I'd put the drugs down, I had done some work on myself, but probably a lot more work needed doing.
Yes.
Because changing patterns of behaviour, patterns of how you think, how you feel, you know, going back decades,
yes,
it's not something that can be achieved overnight.
No.
And
I suspect needs help.
Because I'm naturally sort of inquisitive and like if I take something on, I will want to rip it to bits and fully understand everything. So I think when I'd been in recovery the first time and stayed clean for 3 years and then had a brief relapse, about 7 weeks it was, and then went back on the program again, I think it was then that you start realising that maybe we're just scratching the surface and we go deep. And I remember Jackie saying to me, we will be going deep.
Adverse childhood experiences can affect the mental health of people later on in life. Indeed, even bullying at school has been shown to create social anxiety. Perhaps you could give us an insight into your old childhood experience and how it shaped your own journey into adulthood.
Growing up, I grew up in a family. My mum, my dad left when I was 6 months old, so I had no relationship with him at all. I had an older sister, an older brother, and a younger sister, but I always felt like I was someone, I loved excitement, I loved adrenaline, I was a risk taker. I always seemed to be in trouble. I can't look back and say that my childhood was particularly unhappy because that's not how I remember it. But it become unhappy through my behaviour. I think if anything, I probably craved a lot of love and I had very loving grandparents. My relationship with my mum was always strained because I was always in trouble. And then at school, I was always the kid who was in trouble at school, primary school, and then moved up to secondary school.
Yeah.
And I always felt that I was older than I was. I certainly looked older than what I was. I had built a reputation of being a bit of a naughty boy, bad boy, whatever you want to call it. And the older I got, the worse that showed itself. Till eventually I was taken into care at the age of 12. This is sort of mid to late 70s, and I was shipped off to a school for what in those days they called for maladjusted kids, which today would probably be termed behavioural difficulties. And really that catapulted my behaviour into a whole new level because I hated it. And I always fought against what I didn't like and certainly fought against authority. I felt, you know, completely cut off from my family. I just hated being in care and I fought tooth and nail against everything.
I think whilst you were in care, you obviously had quite bad experiences with bullying from the staff that worked there.
The sort of culture of the children's home that I was in, it was a boarding school, so we lived there and went to school there. It was out in the country, and I was there with 50 other guys who were all very similar to me. At that time, I would have been one of the youngest there. Although to look at me, you wouldn't have known that because I always looked a lot older. And there was a culture of bullying and, you know, it was almost like there was a camaraderie between us, but always tinged with threats and intimidation and violence. It was just the nature of the young men who were there at the time. And I have to say that culture extended itself into the staff as well. Their way of trying to manage us would certainly lead them in the courts today.
Yeah.
You know, corporal punishment and different punishments that really was aimed at humiliating you.
Yeah.
So it was a very unkind environment. There was no like love or care or empathy. It was pretty much dog eat dog.
Yeah. No, I think you put on record that you had a hatred of the police, I suppose, back then. And perhaps I'm wondering whether part of that was because I know you'd reported these practices, and I think you so that basically nothing was done about it.
Yeah, well, I used to run away, and when you run away, you're logged as a missing person, and sometimes I'd have periods of 2 or 3 days out of there, and sometimes it would extend into weeks, but invariably it would end with the police picking me up, and I would say, you know, when I get back, they're going to give me a beating and they're going to lock me up. And because they used to have a room there that they used to call the sick bay, but in actual fact it had bars on the window,
right,
and we were locked up. And I've since found out a few years back that was actually an illegal practice, that they needed a certain type of license to be able to do that,
right,
and they would use threats and intimidation and corporal punishment that at times was just plain violence. Mm. But I have to say that wasn't from all of the staff. Some of the staff were not like that at all, but there were certainly 2, 3, 4 key members of staff who would use those tactics to try and control. And I remember especially one guy, he was an ex-Marine, and he used to train Marines in unarmed combat, and he knew techniques and different ways that could cause you severe pain without leaving any marks or anything like that. But my response to that was to get revenge, and I always got revenge, even at my own expense.
Yeah.
So there was a time once where one of the housemasters came in and we argued, and I was laying in my bed and he punched me in the mouth. I was 13 at the time, and he was an ex-Marine, and he punched me in the mouth, and like it really, really shocked me at the time. But within 20 minutes I'd crept up on him and put a belt across the back of his head,
right,
knowing that I was still going to get a beating as a result of that.
Yes.
But that's what I was like as a young guy, you know. I would not, my pride and that, just that feeling of wanting to get revenge. Obviously I knew it was wrong, but you have to also put into context that back then that's what happened. You know, it wasn't an environment that you find today with safeguarding and child protection and you know, the culture of looking after and keeping young people safe today just didn't exist then at all.
No.
You know.
No. So you made no secret of the fact that addiction has played a large part of your life. Many addicts say they've never felt they were given a rule book for life. What was your experience?
I became a drug user from about the age of 12, 13. Fairly typical progression. Started off using cannabis and then experimented with things like magic mushrooms and acid and amphetamines and alcohol. And I guess looking back, reflecting, I always used to use more than anyone else, and I used to crave it more than anyone else. So the signs were there in my drug use from a very early time. But obviously at the time, I didn't understand any of that. I was just using drugs because I enjoyed using them. And I wanted to use as much as I could. And I think it also gives you, or gave me, sort of a sense of identity amongst some of the older guys. So you become part of. And I certainly enjoyed that aspect of my drug taking, where there's a sort of a togetherness of people who are taking drugs together. But I certainly never, you know, for a minute stopped to think about how much I was using or what I was using or what the impact might be at all. I was just enjoying using drugs. I felt better when I used drugs. That was it.
And was there something particular that made you start using drugs, or was it just purely for no other reason that you enjoyed doing it?
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, you know, if you could stereotype a young drug user, I was probably it. You know, quite angry young guy, disconnected from his family, in the care system, upset by, you know, lots of different things. And I was a risk taker and I loved excitement. So drugs was really always going to be, you know, come into my life.
I was interested because we were talking about this earlier about gangs or being part of a group, and really, when you look at it, people in that group ultimately don't really care about the other people in that group. It's a bit of a false hope in some respects.
Yeah, I think it is, although I have to say that in the moment, I think there is a togetherness and a connection. I think maybe that disappears very quickly when consequences come your way or come the way of the group. But I think
put to the test, I suppose.
Yeah,
isn't
when, when it's put to the test. But I think there is, or was, in my experience, there was that sense of being together, and it's almost like you all share a secret. Because, you know, back in those days, certainly we hid our drug use. I hid my drug use from my family for as long as I could, and also hid it from people who didn't use drugs. So it was almost like a secret little network of people, of the drug takers and those who didn't. But no, I think you're right. I think, you know, drug taking is a very selfish thing. And certainly, you know, if things happen, the loyalties fall apart very quickly, I think.
And I don't know if drug taking or the availability of drugs now, which I suppose correlates to people taking drugs, is whether it was more available then as it is now, or whether the supply has changed.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in my experience, drugs have always been available. I think that they're probably more widely available now, and certainly in more variety. You know, when I was a young teenager, we didn't hear of heroin or cocaine or drugs like that then. It was probably three or four drugs, you know, cannabis, amphetamines, LSD, magic mushrooms, and that was about it. If you found someone who had some cocaine, it was quite a discovery. It wasn't, you know, but I think now the variety of drugs is more widely available than what it was then.
But certainly from my own experience of dealing with crime, if you will, the press will make a big thing about heroin, but I think cocaine seems to be the biggest problem at the moment amongst average men and women in society these days, certainly when mixing it with alcohol.
I think you're right. I think cocaine has become certainly one of the most widely used drugs in society today. And I think there's a certain amount of that it's more socially acceptable than other drugs. Heroin has always been a drug that's used in the shadows, and therefore you don't really get a true picture of who's using it and who's not outside of your, you know, your own circle.
Because I think the film Trainspotting did a lot to do down the image of heroin, I think, because as you say, you think of that dirty addict.
Yeah, I think Trainspotting was a great portrayal of a group of people in heroin addiction.
You began to turn your life around, and having missed most of your educational years, you literally went back to school. Academically, you proved to be a talented student. How important is education, not only in rehabilitation, but also as part of the childhood experience?
I mean, I think education's absolutely key, fundamental, and looking at it from the perspective of somebody who wants to rehabilitate themselves or wants to experience a deeper experience in recovery. So my experience of education as a child was I hated it. You know, I didn't particularly hate school. I quite liked going to school, but purely for the social aspect of school. Education really didn't interest me. And I don't particularly think I lacked any ability. I can't ever remember sort of, you know, struggling to do work if I tried. So it wasn't a case of lacking ability. It was just I had no desire and no interest in it. But my experience of an adult in recovery with education was that I'd been clean, and then the next thing that I'd done was went to the education department in prison and had an education assessment, which is a, you know, most people have that process done. And I come out at the level of about a level one I come out, which is about the year level of a year seven in today's schooling.
To what age would that
about
be?
About 12.
Okay.
And to start with, I sat a couple of numeracy and literacy tests, level one and level two, and then went on to take two GCSEs, English and Maths, all encouraged by the education department in the prison I was in. And then my counsellor, a guy who had been working with me as a drugs counsellor, said, I think you could do really good in education, and shared with me how he'd trained to be a psychotherapist from the age of 49. I think at that time I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I was drug free, and I certainly was of the mindset that I need to get out of prison and never return again, but I didn't know, I didn't particularly have any great plans about how that was going to happen. And I began doing a foundation course with Lampeter University, distance learning. And the first course I'd done was interpersonal skills. It was like a basic skill set course for a foundation course for people who want to do counselling. And that was sort of a level five course, and I went through that and passed with a distinction, which really surprised me. And I found out that I was actually quite good at answering questions and writing essays and studying and researching. And I then enrolled with the Open University and spent the next 5 years each year getting progressively tougher in, you know, the courses that I was doing. And I picked social sciences, so I was studying psychology and criminology, and things that interested me, because I've always been interested in society, crime, psychology, and those sorts of things. You know, the further I went with that, I ended up swaying more towards criminology side, so I started studying youth justice and that side of education, and each course that I completed, I felt like I had achieved something. I felt really good in myself. It built my confidence, it built my self-esteem. And I think education very much is, you don't only learn about the subject that you're studying, you actually get a lot more rewards than just the knowledge that you're learning. It's a, for me, it was very much about, you know, how I felt about myself, having a belief in myself, not having, you know, the fear of starting a course thinking, oh, I can't ever do that.
Yeah.
You know, and as each year rolled into the next, I become very confident with my studies. And as I say, it's, for me, the knowledge of the particular subject that you're studying is great, obviously, but I got far more out of education than just learning that stuff. You know, I learned to write properly. I just learned how to put arguments. I started thinking academically, and the subjects that I was actually studying naturally present different opinions and attitudes towards different things. So it started shaping my views on criminal justice and how young people should be dealt with, and all those things, you know, which for me was probably the most important part of my educational journey.
Well, I suppose the old saying, isn't it, knowledge is power, or gives you confidence, which is what you said.
Yeah, and I always say knowledge is power, but it's no good if you don't use it. So I think using your knowledge is where the power is.
Well, that nicely brings me to what we were talking earlier about, the charity that you've been involved in. So just tell me a little bit about that.
Okay, so in 2007, not long after I met Jackie, I was fortunate enough to be invited to join a very small team of prisoners who operated in the prison that I was in at the time. And the Youth Justice Service used to bring people into the prison, and they run a very small scheme, and it was, the whole aim of it was to expose them to some of the realities of prison life, meet some real life prisoners, and go through a program from the Youth Justice Service, but supplemented with some real life experience. And I found that I really enjoyed it, but I always thought that what they were actually doing with the young people was a little bit tick boxy, and that and I started thinking about how I might have responded to that sort of intervention when I was a kid, and I thought, you know, without being arrogant, I just felt that a lot of it was very like, you know, we've had a meeting, we've discussed this, but not a lot really has happened. And I started putting together some ideas and putting some programs together, thinking about what had helped me on my own journey, how we could incorporate that into a structured academic program. So have a balance of real lived experience with some evidence-based intervention that would really get them thinking. And the more that I'd done that work, and the more that I studied and started looking at things, and also incorporated some of the things that we do within the 12-step program as well, but probably in a more subtle way. Because I think talking about your experience and talking about what's happened, like I always like to use, like thinking about a young guy turning up to his youth offending team manager and being scared of actually telling the truth. Because if I really tell you what's going on in my life, I could potentially be punished for it. So I'll sit before you. How are you? I'm fine. Are there any problems? No. Is everything okay? Yes. Are you taking any drugs at the moment? No. And that meeting's happened and it's taken place.
Yes.
But what has actually taken place is nothing.
Yes.
So I wanted to create something where they could talk about how they really felt and what was really going on. Because unless they're given the opportunity to do that, then nothing is going to happen. Mm. How do you expect people to change when they're not given a forum to be able to do that? Because unfortunately, our justice system is very much like, it's like someone going for parole. If you go up for parole and you say, well, do you know what? I still feel like I've still got quite a lot of anger in me.
Yeah.
I don't actually know 100% whether I'm going to use drugs or not again. Yes. I probably need to do a bit more work on that, because the result of that is that I'm going to be punished, kept in prison longer, or for young guys in the community, potentially have more charges laid against them. So it has to become a secret. It has to remain hidden. So my whole idea was about creating a service that where they could really express themselves, and that we as ex-prisoners would role model that it is all right to talk about being scared, it's all right to talk about where you're really at with your drug use, it's all right to say you're struggling in whatever area it is, it's all right to say, yeah, maybe I shouldn't be hanging around with this guy, that guy, or the group of friends I'm hanging around with, but that's my life.
Yes.
So it's about creating something that's real, and the 12-step program really is all about that. It's about speaking your truth without fear of reprisals.
Well, it's only stigma as well, and you were doing that way back then. You'll be glad to know that the police service has finally caught up, and in 2018 we're starting to remove stigma about mental health and well-being for exactly the reasons that you've just said.
But as well it was about how we could turn negative experiences into something positive. And I always felt really sad and very reflective that I'd spent 18 years in prison, and what is that all for? You know, and when I started working with these young guys, I started feeling like it was actually for something. It wasn't going to be a waste. It was going to be for something. That my experiences, in the same way that Jackie's experiences in recovery benefited me, that some of my experiences could benefit other people, and at least create an environment where it was all right to talk.
And I know I've asked Jackie this before, and I've asked a few other people. I've done podcasting, and if you had a turn the clock back and live your life differently, a lot of people say, well, no, I wouldn't, because it wouldn't be brought me to the place I am now.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel like that, but when I, if I was to say that, and I don't.
Albeit 18 years is a long time.
I don't think I would wholeheartedly say that, you know, I wouldn't change a thing, because I'm aware that, you know, my family suffered a lot as a result of my choices, my kids did, other people did, and I think to say, you know, I wouldn't change a thing, almost, it almost feels wrong for me to say that, because if I hadn't have lived like that, then a lot of other people wouldn't have suffered.
Yeah.
But I understand the sentiment behind it, that, yeah, I, you know, I enjoy my life today, and more importantly, I like who I am, and probably if none of that would have happened, I might not have experienced that. And I think a lot of people trudge through life and don't actually know who they are. And one thing I do know is who I am. I know my strengths, and I know my weaknesses, and I know where my risks lie, and I know, you know, why I feel certain things are, you know. So understanding myself is, you know, I love it. I love knowing who I am.
Graham Gordon, thank you very much.
Thank you.